on this episode of Rebel Spirit Radio.
I mean, this is probably the most intimate experience possible for human beings, right? I mean, this is intimacy on a whole other level that most people can't even relate to, which is both, you know, beautiful, but it's also something that, like you're saying, can be hazardous if someone's not prepared or really open to all of what can arise. And so when I started working with people, you know, this is going back a number of years, I mean, there was, of course, the spontaneous thing. So there was a part of me that was exploring what was really the unknown as well. And it was only through time, you know, working with my wife and working with some close friends, that I started to really like open up. And of course, I was doing a lot of reading into the literature, because there's not really much written about psychedelics and telepathy, but there's certainly a lot written about telepathy more generally.
Welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio, exploring the frontiers of spirituality, consciousness, the esoteric, and humanity's sacred relationship with a living earth. I'm your host, Nick Mather, and in this episode, I am joined by author Wade Richardson to discuss his book, Psychedelic Mind Meld. The conversation delves into the concept of psychedelic mind melds, psychedelically created telepathy that allows two people to deeply share their physical and psychic contents. Wade discusses the therapeutic aspects of this practice, potential for mutual healing, the various substances that can facilitate these experiences, and the necessity of safety and preparedness. Also, please be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. Your support is truly appreciated. Wade Richardson is a psychonaut with more than 15 years of experience participating in and facilitating hundreds of psychedelic sessions. He joins me today to discuss his first book, Psychedelic Mind Meld, Telepathically Exploring Shared Consciousness. Wade, welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio.
Thank you, Nick. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm very excited to talk to you. As soon as I saw the title of this book, I thought, ooh, I want to talk to this man. And the first question I have is the title, Psychedelic Mind Meld. On one level, it seems like what that is may be obvious, but I thought that it would be a good place to start. What is a psychedelic mind meld? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, that's a very big question, because there's so many different component parts to that. But really simply, it's psychedelically created telepathy. So where telepathy is something that I think all humans can engage in, you know, there's the simple version of, you know, we have people who've done research in these areas where they communicate to their pets or something like that, like, you know, the dog that is proverbially waiting for their owner to come home after work. And that, of course, can happen in the context of the person just thinking of coming home from work, coming home at different times. Another classic would be someone making a phone call to a friend, and their friend was expecting the call because they were thinking of each other. So there's those kind of basic things. But this goes a lot deeper, where psychedelics are a tool to basically work with the ego, relegating the ego and dropping far further into a psychic connection. And what I'm really promoting is, you know, doing this work with two people in an intimate setting, and where they're basically both lying side by side and meditating deeply together to, you know, basically conjoin into this symbiotic relationship of sharing contents. And that's where we get into the depth of what this is, you know, in terms of the sharing of contents, there's the physical contents and the psychic contents. So at a physical level, it's interesting to watch, is it's possible for each body to pick up on blockages at a physical level within the other body. And when I talk about blockages, that tends to be related to trauma. And trauma, of course, you know, as human beings, is a pretty common thing. It's difficult to be in the human body as a vessel. So trauma can come from, you know, birthing trauma. It can come from, you know, challenges with parents and peers. Also, you know, accidents, disease, etc. And of course, then there's the ego, which, you know, in terms of the monkey mind, creates all sorts of stresses. And those stresses show up as chemicals within the body, endogenous chemicals that are spread throughout the body. And they create blockages as well to our homeostasis or full functioning. So what's interesting in the psychedelic mind meld is that the bodies can actually pick up on this in each other. And basically, you can watch as the body beyond the mind will actually drop into the other body, physically moving and finding these blockages and then massaging them out, which is often a really deep, painful experience. And that's not unlike what you would find with energy healers of, various kinds. Osteopaths who are really good will tune into the other body intuitively and find those blockages and clear them out through various forms of massage. So that's at the physical level. As we start to move into the psychic, we can actually really pick up on each other's emotions, and that's felt physically. And maybe just as a quick example, I was working with a woman and, we're dropping in very quickly in the session. And within about half an hour, I start picking up on where she's at, in terms of the dominant emotions within her. And there were layers of, resentment towards her husband. There was a lot of grief around a sibling of hers passing. And then there were layers of self-hatred. And I was picking up on all of that because, of course, as you drop into telepathy at this level, you're picking up on all of what's going on in the other person. There's like a complete transparency. And what was so fascinating about this was that, I'm picking up on all these emotions, but she's aware that I'm actually picking up on these emotions. And then, of course, instantly there's this, defensiveness, and there's a lot of shame around what's being shared. And for me, it was like, hey, I've been doing this for a while, and I'm very aware of the mosaic of who we are as human beings at in terms of our belief systems and where we're at emotionally and our various layers of personality. And I just drop in, and it's like, no, this is okay. There's nothing to be ashamed of. This is a part of who we all are as humans, and we can all reach into these different states of emotions. And as she realized that I was, in a calm and peaceful, accepting place, then she dropped in deeper and let go of various things and started to kind of transmute these emotions. And then from there, we went into, ultimately these heavenly realms and had this amazing experience. So, that again is on the continuum where there's a physical feeling of sensation. And then from there, we can drop into the fully psychic space of sharing. And of course, a lot of people, when they think of telepathy, they think of, the sharing of thoughts, like a conversation in terms of language. And that can occur, but that tends to be less common. And it's more kind of a gnosis or a feeling into the other person's experience. And like I was saying, in terms of the psychic component, you can actually share consciousness in terms of experience and start to journey into, other worlds or dimensions. And just a quick example of that, it's in the opening of the book. I work with my wife a lot, and one of our first experiences was, doing mushrooms, lying together, meditating. And what's interesting about this is the intent going into the session is just to basically sit completely still and conjoin in a telepathic sharing without, setting a destination ahead of time. I think, for those who've done a lot of this type of work, you can start to play around a bit more with intention, but to work with really trying to validate the experience is just to go in without an agenda. And so we go into the session together, and the next thing we know, we're in a fractal version of ancient Japan in a tea house together, and we're drinking tea side by side, wearing kimonos. There's other people in the tea house, but it's not, kind of the default reality in terms of like a hard and fast tea house. It's a fractal version. So, the walls are glistening, and there's, I guess there's more bright light and kind of fractal rainbow colors and things. But the point really is that we journeyed to this other dimension, possibly a past life event. And we're fully engaged there through shared consciousness. So that's kind of the quick and dirty of the telepathic sharing, both at a
Right.
physical and psychic level.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that. There are several ways to go forward, I think, from all of that. So I'm just going to start picking at some things and see where we go. One thing that came to mind when you were talking and also reading your book was that this seemed to be a very
kind of healing, I don't know if I want to call it a modality or experience, perhaps maybe a better word. And I'm curious because the way you described it in the book, you and with what you were just saying, that you maybe experienced blockages of the other person and was able to help clear that. Now, is this something where one person is acting as a kind of healer? Or is it something where both people, where it's a sort of mutual healing project?
Well, I would say ultimately it is a co-creative project, but at various times one person will take the lead, or at least seemingly take the lead versus the other, where one person might be more engaged in the deeper massage and releasing that from the other person. But that can quickly turn around as long as both people have really relegated their ego and completely open to the sharing of the experience. The other person can kind of jump back and start doing clearing in the other person. And certainly it is a transmuting of long-held trauma that the person potentially individually on their own couldn't release, you know? So it's been sitting there for years. And maybe just a quick example of that, I won't go into much detail about the story because it was kind of a long event, but in short, I was with this friend of mine at an ayahuasca ceremony, and this was really the beginning of the telepathic sharing for me, even after, you know, having done psychedelics for a number of years. So we're sitting in an ayahuasca ceremony in the jungle, facilitated by several shamans. And I was at the end of the third night, I was kind of struggling because not much had happened, but I was thinking, like, well, why am I here? You know? And it was really for my friend who was struggling with alcoholism. And he himself, in the previous couple nights, had really, struggled in terms of being physically sick, which of course, you know, with ayahuasca and working with substance abuse is pretty normal. Anyway, the point was for me, I was, kind of feeling a bit lost. Not much was happening. And so I decided just to kind of meditate on an open-heartedness and sharing with him, because ultimately he was why I was there, just to kind of, see him work through his challenges and help him with that. And I frankly didn't expect much to happen. It was just kind of like, you know, looking to just kind of expand my own consciousness and in kind of a loving way. And that was, I mean, it sounds kind of simple, but that was all I was expecting. I wasn't expecting it to go anywhere, but all of a sudden, boom, you know, this massive amount of energy flooded through my body, you know, up through my spine, and my right arm just spontaneously reached out and grabbed his head. And the next thing I know, there's this energy moving. It's moving from him through my arm, and I start sobbing and then profoundly crying, shaking. And, you know, I'd been doing psychedelics for quite some time by this point, so I was pretty used to weird. And it was pretty weird, right? But I was, oh, okay, I can work with this and just see where it goes. And so that went on for almost half an hour, eventually ending. And there was no story associated with it, so I didn't have any sense of why that was happening. And there were a bunch of other things that happened that night. But anyway, the next day, I asked my friend, you know, what was his experience of that? And he was pretty shooken up. And he shared with me that, it was him releasing grief around the death of his daughter, who died when she was around 4 years old from a disease. And that he had never processed, you know, and this was 20 years earlier. So clearly he had not been able to drop into letting that go. And, you know, all this time passes by. And then in the ceremony, all these years later, we're, conjoined in this again co-creative process of healing ultimately.
Thank you for sharing that. I know that, especially with ayahuasca, originally it was referred to by some as, what was it, a telepathine or
Telepathy.
something? Yeah, telepathy, something like that. And I know that, you know, I've gone to a couple of ayahuasca retreats, and it was always interesting that when we would have sort of the sharing circles, you know, the morning or afternoon after the ceremony, people would actually refer to saying having these sort of shared experiences. And I remember one, I wish I could remember all the details. It was actually the first one I ever attended. And there was this fellow there that I know in our first sharing circle, he moved everybody with this experience. He was like former military, and there was a lot of pent up stuff from his father. And he had this experience where he was like trapped and he couldn't reach out to his daughter or his wife. And by the last evening, he, a lot of stuff got cleared, but he told us this story because at the retreat, they took our phones, because they're like, you don't want to be calling your ex when you're still under the medicine, right? And when he got his phone back on the last day, his wife contacted him. And apparently she was having this experience that he was having under the medicine, and she wasn't under the medicine, and she was, hundreds and hundreds of miles away. And I just found that fascinating. And, my initial response was that, there's something sort of supernatural about that medicine.
Well, it speaks to the non-locality of telepathy, right? I mean, the work that I'm suggesting here is that we're doing it side by side so we can also physically engage. And then, of course, there's more of a focus on each other because you're so physically present for each other. But ultimately, yeah, I think that telepathy is something that's non-local, that doesn't require touch, and can occur over long distances, like you're describing.
So with the medicines themselves, does this work with any kind of psychedelic? And it also, in conjunction with that, it seems like maybe the dosage is important, so that maybe this is this something that works with, small doses, or do you have to have like a medium-sized dose or large doses?
Yeah, no, those are good questions. In terms of the psychedelic, I suspect that most psychedelics, if not all psychedelics, could probably be used to work towards, telepathic sharing. And I say that because psychedelics are powerful tools that can be used to relegate the ego. So if we think that, someone who is working without psychedelics and working at the telepathic level, they're doing so because they're able to work, very well with their mind at an intuitive level. Like we think of empaths, I mean, they're working at a telepathic level in terms of, feeling into what other people are feeling and those types of things. So you have to always remember that the psychedelics here are a tool. And so, yeah, I mean, basically relegating the ego, working with psychedelics, I think that most of them are likely going to do that. Of course, I've only tried a handful. I mean, there's I think over a couple hundred natural-based psychedelics out in nature. And then, of course, there's a whole large number of manufactured psychedelics, thanks to Shulgin and others like him. So, I've predominantly worked with ayahuasca, mushrooms, LSD, 5-MeO-DMT. And of course, 5-MeO-DMT warrants a whole other conversation because it's such an extremely powerful psychedelic, and Martin Ball has done a good job about writing about that. So yeah, I think there's a lot of possibility out there, and one that kind of stands out too is cannabis. I haven't had any meaningful success at a telepathic level with cannabis, but it's certainly in the literature that it's possible. And of course, most people using cannabis are doing so mindlessly, in a sense, like it's recreational. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but to really drop in at a deeper level, you do have to get into meditation. And of course, most of Western society doesn't really get into that. It's not much of a thing. So yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of possibilities out there and a lot of room for experimentation. In terms of dosage, I think that's, yeah, kind of tricky. Certainly, I'm working with high dose. So by any standard, depending on the psychedelic, there's literature on what is, a low, moderate, and high dose. And it's a bit of a tricky conversation because if you think of mushrooms, different mushrooms have different potencies. And then, of course, each individual experience, even for the same person, working with the same dose can vary quite a lot. So it's going to depend on individual and their biography. Yeah. So in terms of, yeah, working with the dosage, again, it can vary depending on the person in each session. But it really comes down at an individual level to how well they can, again, relegate their ego to drop in. And so it's just a matter of like, well, how much of a psychedelic is that going to, be required? And in my experience, it's generally a fairly high dose. But I would expect that, there are going to be people out there who fall into this really easily and naturally and could probably work with just low doses.
You know, one of the things you just said, you know, I jotted down a note early on in the conversation when you were describing the psychedelic mind meld, and you had mentioned feeling in, and I wrote empathic, because to me, that's what seemed to be happening in large sense, is that there's this sort of empathic connection. Now, you explained, you know, the scenario with you and your wife in Japan, that kind of vision. But in large part, it seems like it is an empathic sort of experience where people are really feeling into it. And like you said, it's not just, you know, how we normally think of, you know, like sharing thoughts, that we're having this conversation without moving our lips, but that there's this sort of energetic component to it. Let me ask this. What is the going into this? I know that you've worked with a lot of people doing this, and I would imagine that this is not something that everyone wants to do, that it is select people, and that you have to be kind of careful, because it seems like, especially if you are opening yourselves up to this energy and to this sort of empathic experience, that you have to sort of know how to work with that energy. And you could be hit with what is sometimes referred to as bad trips. I think in the book you refer to them as challenging experiences, which I prefer. But how do you prepare for all of this? And how do you prepare someone else to engage in this experience?
Yeah, I think, this is a very important conversation, just in terms of the safety that's required. And of course, yeah, just the awareness that's acquired. So it really is for the advanced user in many ways, right? So, I mean, there's a real need for people to have a background in and familiarity with psychedelics in terms of, you know, what is going to come up for their own experience, being aware of their own, you know, physical content and psychic content, so to speak. Being aware of their shadow contents in particular is very important because, of course, you know, psychedelics are an amplifier of our, you know, if we're really struggling at an emotional level, that's likely to be amplified. So if someone's not able to kind of work with their own material, yeah, don't jump in to try to work with someone else's material, right? Keep it in mind too. I mean, when you are jumping in, I mean, this is probably the most intimate experience possible for human beings, right? I mean, this is intimacy on a whole other level that most people can't even relate to, which is both, you know, beautiful, but it's also something that, like you're saying, can be hazardous if someone's not prepared or really open to all of what can arise. And so when I started working with people, you know, this is going back a number of years. I mean, there was, of course, the spontaneous thing. So there was a part of me that was exploring what was really the unknown as well. And it was only through time, you know, working with my wife and working with some close friends that I started to really like open up. And of course, I was doing a lot of reading into the literature because there's not really much written about psychedelics and telepathy, but there's certainly a lot written about telepathy more generally. And there's also stuff written about, you know, kind of the physical contents of what for some what they would call, you know, the Kundalini awakening and that type of movement of energy. So there was also a lot of research going on in the background in terms of just trying to understand my own experience and make sense of it. Martin Ball really helped because he, you know, through his books, talked a lot about fractal energetic yoga and the, you know, the spontaneous movement of energy in the body. So that really helped me to validate what was going on for me and go further working with other people. And I mean, that's part of the point of my book too, right? So, which is to validate the experience of those who are dropping into this incidentally, because, you know, it's not something in any way unique to me. There's, as you're pointing out, you know, in various ayahuasca ceremonies and other psychedelic experiences around the world, there's things that are happening. People are like, what just happened? I don't understand. And so the book is meant to help kind of, yeah, create a framework of understanding and normalize what's possible. So there's all of that. And then working with my, yeah, friends and stuff, I found that with the book, you know, I wrote the book because, you know, I would have to spend, you know, 2 to 3 hours if I was working with someone new just to try to brief them around the experience because it's so complex. There's just kind of an infinite array of things that can arise. And of course, there's themes that I've tried to summarize, but there's just so many possibilities. And when you're working in these sessions, I mean, these experiences are so rich and often can be so overwhelming. They're completely new to the person who's, new to these experiences. So prepping people with what, trying to normalize the strangeness before they drop into it is important because, of course, as people drop into these weird experiences, it helps for the mind to have a little bit of a framework to go, oh, no, this is okay. This is okay. And I've certainly had experiences where, with all the briefing and everything, I drop in and, I'm dropping into the exchange at a physical level, doing the deep massage, and then, starting to open up into a psychic sharing. And then the person kind of freaks out a bit and they kind of push me away and they're like, oh, what's going on? What's going on? And then it's kind of like, yeah, we've read about this. We're doing, X or Y psychedelic, and we're now dropping into, dropping deeper. And it's kind of funny, right? Then it's like, oh, yeah, there's a memory of the briefing. And then they just relax and drop back in again. So it's kind of, yeah, this interesting play. But again, all of what I'm saying speaks to this is an advanced work.
Yeah. Well, it occurs to me that as we undergo this sort of, what's being called a psychedelic renaissance, and there are people training now to be psychedelic therapists, that this is something that ought to be addressed in the training because, the therapists themselves may not be taking any of the medicine. I know sometimes in the shamanic setting, the shaman usually takes a small amount, but they ought to be prepared for the person that they're working with to have this kind of experience. Because it seems to me that based on what you're saying and what's in your book, that there can be profound healing taking place here. And if the therapist isn't kind of aware, that seems like it's a missed opportunity.
Yeah, well, I think not only a missed opportunity, I think for the therapist who's unaware of the depth of what's possible, you can have a client who's taking the psychedelic who all of a sudden is doing, therapeutic work on their counselor, therapist, right? Because they're telepathically tuning in to the other person's contents who's unaware. They're just thinking that they're doing all the work. And there's stories of this in the literature, like Stanislav Grof, for example, describes a number of these types of scenarios. And, so then it's a question of, yeah, are people being trained as therapists for this type of thing? And are they ready to be opened and transparent to their client who, supposedly as a therapist, they have their stuff a little bit more together than the client. But then the client realizes, like, no, this person is a human being too. And it's, all sorts of things in and within themselves, right? So it's this, yeah, profound sharing that can occur very unexpectedly. And of course, then there's all of the other potential for emotional release and those types of things and the movement. And yeah, and you really want to make sure that the therapist is very familiar with how strange some of this can get. Or if there's a psychotic break and the person takes all their clothes off, which, this is of course happens with psychedelics. It's rare. I mean, depending on the literature that you look at, it might only be 1 to 2%, but I've seen it, like it's happened when I facilitated and the next thing the person's, naked. And I'm fine with that, of course, but then it's like it opens up this risk of, how does that person react when they're, well, oh, wait a minute, I'm naked, and has something gone wrong here? And then, a false narrative can be created and it can get really complicated very quickly. So that's an important thing that I talk about in the book too, right? I mean, that these things can happen. And if you're, as a client or a person that wants to engage in this work, if you're not comfortable with these possibilities, don't do it, don't do it.
So as you've been doing this and working with this, I would imagine that someone would like say, hey, this is something I would like to try. I imagine you've got a fairly small circle that you're working with. And do people have, is it, I would imagine they come at it from a couple different perspectives. One might just be, I want to explore consciousness in general, and I think it would be really awesome to healing. I was thinking that this would be something incredible to experience with a partner that you said, it's like one of the most intimate things that one can experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of my own work, dropping in with my wife is the most profound, awesome, connection and relationship. And it's really contributed to us being a strong power couple because we have dropped into such intimate places together. We know each other so well at all various levels. We've, done healing work on each other, journeyed to other dimensions together. It's just absolutely incredible. Yeah, kind of working as a team, essentially, in terms of exploring consciousness and each other's healing. And it's actually, I have to say, my wife is absolutely amazing because she knows the depth of this work and how intimate it is. And yet she's, fine with me working with other people and actually is encouraging. And yeah, I think that's just so beautiful.
It seems like it's something that is, I don't know, there's the profound intimacy with it. I don't know that most people are ready for that.
Again, this is really work for the advanced user, and it's really about psychonautics, exploration, and again, I mean healing, but it's at a very deep, deep level.
Very profound. So, one of the things I wanted to ask, you've already mentioned this, and I was hoping that you could explain it a little bit more, but you had mentioned fractal energetic yoga. And I was wondering if you could explain what that is and how that, what role it plays in the psychedelic mind meld.
Sure. So fractal energetic yoga is basically, if we think of ourselves as kind of beings of light and energy and frequencies, so the human vessel, is created essentially, if you want to think, by God or the divine, as everything in the universe. And it's meant to function, kind of at its peak level of perfection, so to speak, which would be homeostasis, right? Where all of the different component parts and systems in the body are working at their optimum level. And as we talked about earlier, the challenge is, of course, we have these various blockages that show up in the body because of traumas. And so when we drop into fractal energetic yoga, it's basically the divine energy beyond the ego mind, right? So this is beyond kind of our conscious awareness as driven by our, narrative thought stream is generated by the ego. So we're dropping away from that. We're letting the body just kind of drop in and release and move all the energy as best it can to, again, return to this ideal state of homeostasis. And so that spontaneous movement is the fractal energetic yoga. And if we want to think of ourselves as fractals in this larger universe where we're connected to everything, basically, the universe is within the human vessel is to kind of clear and work at our optimum level. And, so that yoga, if you will, can often be, well, generally, it's something that can be symmetrical where both sides of the body are doing the same things. It can also be asymmetrical where there's kind of various different types of movement. And all of it is really, again, to kind of clear and stretch the body out and, ideally move these various energies in, the most optimum way possible. And of course, when that's happening and then working with another person, those movements can drop into the other person in terms of, it's like a tuning fork, if you will. So the harmonics at an energetic level are being shared and then, oh, okay, we want to work on this particular area to kind of, increase the vibration, so to speak. And so there's a dropping in and then a movement towards clearing and opening. So there's a better flow of energy in the vehicle.
Okay. And so these movements are, they're sort of spontaneous, right? It's not like
They are.
a set of asanas, in the yoga that you would actually go through, but it's just that the body is naturally making some kind of motion, right?
Yeah, well, what's interesting is that it's going to be unique to every individual because, of course, each of us is going to have our own energetic signature. But it's interesting, like I've had a lot of sessions taped by friends when I'm doing this alone. And you can see various asanas show up that, would be more commonly seen in yoga. So it's not like there's, one is independent from the other. There's a lot of overlap. But at the same time, you can see a lot of positions that don't show up in a normal manual. But I also, after this fractal energetic yoga started happening for me, and I didn't even have a label for it at the time, and I wasn't into yoga at the time either. Like, I didn't have any idea what yoga was all about. Anyway, a bunch of months, or I guess another year, went by, and I ended up signing up for a yoga course. And this yoga instructor, who was from India, and he had been teaching yoga for almost 30 years, so he was, I don't know, I wouldn't put him in the guru class per se, but he certainly knew yoga inside and out. And from the Vedanta background, and yeah, he said to me at one point that there are over 64,000 poses in yoga. So of course, from that perspective, I haven't seen them all, but I would assume that there's a lot of overlap in these spontaneous movements. The other thing is that in these movements, sometimes it can show up as a kind of like a dance form. And I've been in spontaneous dance that is very choreographed. I have no idea where these dances are coming from, but presumably they're somewhere in the collective unconscious and have been devised by some other culture. I've just never found, those linkages. But certainly in the literature, not only the psychedelic literature, but also, the yogic meditative literature, these are things, where these spontaneous things can arise from the collective unconscious. And one of the things I actually really want to plug, because I just came across this recently, are the telepathy tapes.
Oh,
And
yes. Yeah.
this, yeah, you've heard of them, right? So, this
Yeah.
is a scientific study into nonverbal autistic children who are basically in telepathic states almost all of the time, and with the odd child, all of the time. And, there's all sorts of evidence of them connecting into the collective unconscious where, you'll have, maybe an 8-year-old who knows five languages without being exposed to any of them, right? So, well, where does that come from? Obviously, that's, coming from something beyond natural environment if there's no, exposure in terms of their community. So it kind of demonstrates that, yeah, as human beings, we can all tune into this. And again, psychedelics are a tool for those like me who can't normally do that.
Right. Yeah. Thank you for the reminder of the telepathy tapes. I started listening to the first one, and then I don't know how I got distracted, but I got a little bit distracted. I had to do something else, I think. But yeah, it seems that with psychedelics right now, sort of in general, we're undergoing a shift in our understanding because, we don't even really understand consciousness. And you mentioned that in the book. We don't even know where, if the brain is creating it or not. And it always seems to me that it's, my background's also in philosophy. And it's like, we need to take these things into consideration because it's giving us a sense of what is possible and what might actually be real, rather than limiting ourselves. And so I see this as not just important in the terms of healing and personal experience, but in understanding this infinite, mysterious cosmos that we find ourselves in.
Yeah, no, certainly. It's where does it begin and where does it end? And that's the thing with this ex these experiences, from a very experiential level, there's a gnosis of just completely knowing that we're completely porous and that consciousness definitely expands beyond our individual physical brain. And that's what makes this so exciting, because it really, in terms of the Western materialist paradigm, it turns that on its head. And that's what's so exciting about the telepathy tapes too, because of course you have people that will say, well, you're just taking a drug and you're hallucinating and blah, blah, blah. Like, there's going to always be those skeptics out there who are going to come from that perspective. But when you drop into the telepathy tapes with these children, some of them are adults, they're doing these scientific tests, and it's 100% success rate in terms of, working through these tests and experiments. We're normally in the telepathic science literature, it's nowhere near that. It's still significant. Like, telepathy is a thing at some level, but again, these kids are just absolutely amazing. I mean, they're proving that telepathy truly is a thing.
Yeah, it's there's been a lot of research, I know, beyond those that, like you just suggested, the percentage of success isn't nearly as high, but it is been demonstrated. And often what happens is people, the skeptics, they're a little bit less skeptical and a little bit more on the denial side, where they just say, well, no, this is impossible. It can't work for some reason or other. And it's an exciting time that I love seeing these things being brought out, because I think, again, it's so important to the human experience. And one of the things that you bring up a lot in the book, and you've mentioned it a little bit here, is this sort of non-dual experience. And I'm curious about how does that kind of manifest when you're working with someone else? Because it would seem like the division between you and the other person would be completely eradicated.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, right? Because non-dualism in terms of the experience exists on a continuum. So if we think of the empath, again, even without psychedelics, they're reaching into the experience at an emotional level of someone else. So there's a sharing. So that's a breaking down of the duality of, there being kind of a very distinct subject and a very distinct object, like a me versus an other, kind of the materialist framework, so to speak. So dropping into the mind meld, certainly there's the share, like, we've talked about these things already, but we're going to go deeper here. So there's the sharing of emotions. Again, there's a subject and object. And it's kind of interesting, right? Because sometimes this can be pretty blurred. And this is where, working with this longer term and with more experience, it becomes more distinctive and more definitive in terms of, oh, this is my experience at an emotional level or energetic level. And I can tell more obviously when I'm drawing in or picking up on someone else's emotional con experiences where, someone will be kind of in denial, like, oh, that wasn't mine, that was yours. And I'm like, no, that was yours. I've been doing this for a while. And then, through enough discussion, it's like, oh, the person will take ownership. Like, oh, no, that was something, it was with my son or whatever. And, this difficulty I was going through or something. So there is that. But, dropping again deeper, there's the shared consciousness of the psychic content and journeying to other places. So now subject and object again starts to become even less distinct, because the telepathy is just becoming an automatic thing. A thought is in my mind, it immediately is in the other person's mind. There's an immediate sharing. And then going even deeper than that, there's, I've had these experiences where, okay, so now we're looking at each other in, our physical bodies, and I'm looking at you and I see myself in you. In fact, I am you. And of course, the other person's experiencing the same. So now we've dropped all sense of duality in terms of subject and object, and we are one embodying each other. And it can be something that's visual. Sometimes I've had it happen where, I was working with this one woman and she was lying on her stomach and I had my head on the upper part of her spine, and my head just kind of dropped into her spine, and all of a sudden it was, yeah, fully shared consciousness where we're both aware of each other physically. Like, I, her heartbeat in a weird sort of way was my heartbeat and vice versa. And then our heartbeats actually started to sync up together. And then from there, and this is more common, well, it's pretty normal actually with 5-MeO-DMT, and that's why I say it kind of warrants its own discussion at a certain point. But where the whole material realm is obliterated and you are no longer aware of the other person at a physical level or a psychic level, it's just complete non-dual awareness. And when sharing at that level, the only way to confirm that is after the fact, because again, there's just oneness. So there's no mind having a conversation. There's no dialogue. It's just pure awareness, unencumbered by thought form. And so that is, the ultimate non-dual of experience. And again, because there's no relationship to the other person at that point, it's only when you come back from that and it's like, oh yeah, I had that. Oh no, I had that too. And of course you start to put together the timeline, and it's, yeah, okay, that was a shared non-dual experience at its most epic.
Okay. Well, you have mentioned the 5-MeO-DMT and said that it's kind of deserving of its own conversation. So that's something I've not experienced, and I have a little bit of trepidation, I think. But maybe you can talk about it a little bit more. My understanding is this is the origin of it is, I think, the Sonoran desert toad, and I think now there's probably synthetic versions of it, and it's relatively a short-lived experience versus, 6 to 8 hours on mushrooms to 10 to 12 hours or more on LSD. But what else can you say about this in terms of the psychedelic mind meld and why you find this so kind of different than the other substances?
Yeah, well, I think a couple things. One is you're pointing out it's short acting. So there is that difference. It kind of has a little bit of a different setup where normally, with doing the long-term mind meld with these other long-lasting psychedelics, I lie side by side with the person, whether it's in a bed or on a, an open floor on a comfortable mattress or something. And so it's, yeah, side by side, holding hands, again, working with kind of reaching into the physical, but also just, being very focused on each other's aware presence, which is kind of driving the process. So in working with 5-MeO-DMT, I work with Martin Ball's model. So now you're lying kind of opposite each other, where your feet are basically facing each other. And basically, so you sit up, you each smoke the DMT at the same time. And as you're pointing out, it's a very short experience. I mean, it can range from, 5 minutes to 20 minutes. For some people, it's longer. And so you smoke the substance and then you lie back. Both people lie back. So again, you're kind of facing each other on the ground, but just lying down. And then within seconds, because this is such an extremely powerful substance, you're just exploded into, these infinity essentially. But this is where the fractal energetic yoga comes through. So if it's meant to come through, one body or both bodies will come up and meet each other and start driving the energies and pushing the energies through each other, kind of like a high pressured fire hose. So it's extremely intense. It can be very overwhelming. And I certainly understand your trepidation because it's a big deal. It's a huge thing, and it can be, very disorienting. But at the same time, it is the psychedelic that is most likely to get you into these non-dual spaces of the infinite, of, the ultimate divine, of God. I mean, it really is God consciousness at its highest levels. And yeah, and then of course there's all sorts of driving. I mean, it can result in, hacking, coughing, puking, a variety of things, screaming. I mean, I've facilitated working with 5-MeO for quite a number of years, and yeah, I mean, you can watch energies go through people who have this. Well, I've seen one case of someone who had just was so full with just anger, like, and then they're just releasing this out and just pounding the floor, like, to the point where I was concerned, like, I'd, throw pillows under and stuff because I was concerned they're going to put a hole in the floor, But this is just, again, this profound release of stuff that has been very deeply held in the, in the human matrix, so to speak, that just needs to get out. And at this point, of course, for the person, the benefit of their health, because holding this stuff back can cause all sorts of health issues long term. Yeah, so yeah, working the 5-MeO-DMT, it's a big thing. And we're talking about it very briefly here, but again, Martin Ball has written, several books on the subject. And if someone wants to start working with 5-MeO-DMT at this level, I definitely recommend going to his books and seeing what he has to say about working with this at a therapeutic level.
Okay.
And again, actually,
Yeah.
just one other important point that we haven't talked about too much, a little bit, but is that there's such a high level of physical engagement that people have to have a very high level of trust with who they're working with. Because the bodies are moving independently of conscious thought, we have to talk briefly about sexuality because,
Right.
it's one of those things where there can be bumps, and it sounds kind of, a bit strange to maybe use that type of terminology, but it's not unusual as the bodies are moving across each other that, oh, oops, there was a breast that was touched, or, the genitals were kind of bumped. But this is very distinct from any form of groping or anything like that. And again, the This is important in terms of the brief, and I've tried to highlight it in the book and even included an appendix on, what are we okay with in terms of physical touch. And really, at the end of the day, driving towards a model that is where sexuality is off the table. And I say that in terms of sexual engagement, because inevitably, we're sexual beings and these sexual energies play really profoundly through us. And it's normal that, a sexual energy will play through at a certain point in the engagement. And, I identify as heterosexual, cis male. And at the same time, I'll be working. It doesn't matter whether I'm working with a man or a woman. There will be some seconds. It's usually not more than just a couple of minutes, but it usually is at the beginning of the session where there's some type of sexual draw to the other person. And it's not necessarily to have sex, but it could be, in terms of dropping into a deeper physical contact or whatever. And it's, of course, on the whole spectrum. I mean, it could include, strong sexual desire. But of course, at that point, it's just to observe, well, where is that desire coming from? And just kind of sitting with it, observing it, again, using meditation techniques. And inevitably and very quickly, in most cases, it just drops away. And then you drop into a much deeper level of experience. But I highlight this because, of course, it's dangerous territory for a lot of people. You can imagine if someone's been sexually abused, they would come in with a lot of defenses and triggers. So maybe this work isn't for them, even though, maybe they're the ones who could benefit most in terms of normalizing a very high level of trust and physical touch. But again, this comes back to, really being very careful about picking your partner. And this is why it's, I think, good in terms of working with an existing partner or spouse, because there's already that level of intimacy and trust established. But certainly when going out beyond that, I outline a number of things in terms of making sure you're working with someone who is grounded, who is responsible, who is going to be caring. If there are things that where boundaries are crossed, where there's an openness to repair and discussion, then those types of things. So.
I think that you're right. That is very important to bring up. And also because there have been instances of kind of shamans, healers taking advantage of people in these states. And so being very forthright and open about this, I think, is crucial.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're even seeing it in the therapeutic world, right? Where even in the MDMA tests, we're seeing therapists act out sexually. And of course, it's a very, very small number, but I mean, it's happening. And it's unfortunate. But yeah, sexuality in terms of, and of course, tends to be mostly men as the perpetrators, are causing these issues. And it's not, just confined, of course, to psychedelics. I mean, we see it in, our world religions. We see it showing up in the school system. And it's just a really unfortunate thing because it does cause, so much trauma.
It causes damage, I think,
Lots of
too.
damage. Lots of damage.
Now, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, and I think you kind of went down this path a little bit in terms of the body and the experience. One of the things that I found really interesting is you described in the book working with someone and working with their energy, but that you were having the physical effect. I don't know if that's the right word. So, for example, you said that you were like gasping once when you were releasing blocked energy in someone's lungs, and you had this like taste of this nasty taste of, like cigarette smoke with a former smoker. And I found that really interesting that you were having that experience of a physical experience of someone else's emotional or maybe even sometimes physical traumas.
Yeah, well, there certainly have been a few of those cases in terms of, going to the extent of tasting into what is inside of the other person. And the example, of course, is the toxic chemicals that are part of commercial tobacco. I mean, I think if it was perhaps organic tobacco, we wouldn't have the issue. It's hard to, of course, know, but we do know that the commercial tobacco has a whole range of poisons included in it to increase the high for people who are smoking. And I've dropped into that, and the next thing I know, I'm not quite vomiting, but there's this huge surge of this putrid saliva coming out of me, which, causes me to spit and cough up all this stuff. And yeah, it's absolutely disgusting. And that kind of reaches into another topic, which is when doing this work, you have to be prepared to accept everything in the other person as yourself. So I talk about, taking the meditative stance of the bodhisattva. So where we're all in it together, where we try to draw in a high level of compassion, of love, not only for the other person, but ourself, and both as a co-creative entity in terms of this sharing. And so it's, again, this comes back to the therapeutic part of, if you want to call it a modality, where there's a comfort of dropping into discomfort. So, with this taste of tobacco, just to give kind of a quick illustration, it was much more than that. In one of these cases where I was working with this, he's a guy, he's a friend of mine, and he had this horrific trauma occur to him when he was in England, where he was part of, he was in a soccer stadium and there was a bit of a riot, and the police got kind of out of hand. Like, they overreacted, but you can kind of understand the dynamic that may have been occurring there. But he became a victim of that. And at one point, I'm over top of him, and I have, one hand is going into one side of his chest and the other kind of through up through his the other side, kind of creating a line, a direct line in terms of moving the energy. And I'm basically going through and processing all of his experience of being in the stadium, where I'm actually having visuals. Sometimes I have visuals, sometimes I don't. In this particular case, I did. So I was, and the next thing I know, I'm screaming and yelling at the top of my lungs, just processing this, And what was so interesting was that as I'm going through all of this, again, this tobacco is coming through, and this horrible taste, and this went on for quite some time. And what's so interesting is that, after the experience ended, of course we went through a whole debrief. He did not remember that part of the experience. And I was screaming at the top of my lungs. Like, you would think that just that alone would be, something that would stand out, in a multi-hour session. But yeah, he had no recollection of any of that, which I found very fascinating. And I talk a lot about in terms of why that may have happened, in terms of the amnesia, the experience. But yeah, it just, again, in terms of what we're talking about, just the depth of how you can kind of drop in and yeah, transmute these things from the other person at such a deep level that includes potentially things like physical taste.
I found that fascinating, and it's one of the things that I realized, and it surprises me that it took me this long to realize that how we do hold trauma in our bodies, because I think so many people think of it as just like being purely mental, but you had noted that our subconscious mind is really our bodies. And that's where we're going to hold these things. Our emotional memory is within the sinews and the tissue and the muscle and whatnot.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Like, I, when working with my wife, and this was a bit more recently, but working with her body, and I went into her arm at one point. And this is just to kind of highlight that, yeah, we have a lot of trauma that we hold in the body, but we also, are these amazing beings that, can reach into love and joy and bliss. And Stanislav Grof refers to these different things that kind of sit in the body as coexes, which is, basically a, condensed energies. And so I go into her arm, and all of a sudden we both are sharing in this outpouring of blissful love. And it was interesting because as I'm kind of tweaking her arm, and it's just a simple movement of the wrist, I can kind of turn up the volume, so to speak, on this outpouring of love and bliss, or turn it down a bit. But all that to say is that, yeah, we embody both, the light and the dark, so to speak. And as I had mentioned earlier, being a human in physical form on the planet is a very difficult thing. So of course there's a bit more darkness, so to speak, or challenge and trauma than reaching into these blissful light places.
Well, I think it's an important reminder that there are blissful light places, and I think we need that right now. I do have a question that it deviates a little bit, but not by too much, I don't think. So, what you're talking about here, the psychedelic mind meld is with one other person, and at one point you You quoted a couple times Christopher Bache, and I had Chris Bache on the show, one of my very first guests. And he had
Cool.
these, the high dose LSD sessions for over 2 decades. And one of the things that happened with him was he was having, I don't know if this is how he would describe it, but a kind of experience of the collective mind. And I'm wondering if you have had anything similar to that, not just, working with one person, but kind of tapping into the collective mind of our culture or humanity.
Yeah, that has actually come up a number of times for me, and it may occur while working with another person, but more commonly it's me working just independently on my own. Yeah, I mean, just as a quick example, and I think, just to give a sense that this can occur over a whole variety of and different ways, but for me personally, just a quick one is dropping into the horror of genocide. And, I was working with my wife, so we were working together, but something really dark and deep and dense was coming through. And intuitively, I left the room and went into a different bedroom. And the next thing I'm actually in fractal energetic yoga, symmetrically releasing stuff, but it was just this profound darkness of genocide. And, it was associated not only with the genocide of the Jews in Europe during the Second World War, but just genocide more generally. And it was horrific. I mean, my body was pushed to its limits. It was extremely painful. I was heaving. I wasn't actually vomiting, but it was, yeah, this profound darkness. It was extremely sickening. And it was, yeah, it was hard. It's hard to imagine that level of darkness in terms of just processing that. But, this is coming from the collective unconscious. I don't have any direct relationship to genocide in terms of being engaged. And I, maybe in a past life, so to speak, I was, but that's never come through in any definitive way. I will say that I've actually just, from traveling around the world over the years, showed up at some sites that, where genocides have occurred. Maybe I picked up something there that needed being processed. But what was interesting about the experience, this went on for probably half an hour. And again, time is a little hard to keep track of. I'm not looking at the clock, but it was probably something like that. And then, the switch in terms of this coin of where we have both sides of light and dark on the coin, and we just kind of so quickly can flip that over, because as soon as I had processed that, I stood up and I walked into the hallway. And all of a sudden, it was like heaven opened up. And it's not that the physical hallway in any way changed, but all of a sudden, my perception of reality completely changed. And it was like I could feel in to the divine perfection of everything that had been created in the universe. And it was like something had let go of me. Now I was connecting into the divine creative aspect and loving and perfect aspect of the universe. So it was kind of, again, yeah, this flipping of coins, but reaching into this, perfection at an archetypal level. And it was spectacular. It was one of the biggest highlights of my life. And it felt like heaven on earth, as strange as
Wow.
that might be to say. It was that amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Very interesting, very interesting. What comes to mind is, my initial question is, how do you integrate this experience, that experience and this experience of genocide, but also in general, how do you integrate, how do the two people sharing this experience, kind of stepping back, what's that integration process? Because I know that integration is such an important aspect of working with psychedelics.
Yeah, integration is, well, I think, it's open-ended at this point. It's for our culture in particular, we're driven by a materialist paradigm, but of course we have, different religious overlays in there. I mean, the Judaic Christian heritage that we have. But we don't have something that really well explains or a framework for all of the stuff that arises in these psychedelic sessions. And, the religions in their own ways, of course, touch into it, but it's really in the mystical parts of religion that we start to find some answers, which, do show up a bit in my book. But in terms of integration, yeah, I think it's a multi-pronged thing. And part of it is, we have these experiences. So how do we place those in our lived lives? And part of that is, yeah, in our belief system of what is the nature of reality? What is possible for us as humans? And I've certainly noticed over the years, and it has been a long process, how my beliefs have changed. Because, even at the beginning, I'd have these profound experiences and bizarre experiences, and I had so much doubt. I within myself, I took a psychedelic and some weird stuff happened, and whatever, but I don't really believe that that was something that was fundamentally real. So I think that's part of integration, is trying to figure out what is, more real than not, and basically increasing the breadth of our beliefs and understanding of what's possible. And I've really kind of landed on this, kind of drops into Buddhism, but that all of it is a dream. And we have to be careful that we don't attach ourselves to anything, any one thing, too solidly, because everything is impermanent, everything is shifting. Ultimately, everything is energy, and we're just a play in that, kind of a play in the divine expression of God again. And from a non-dual perspective, that is, the non-dual or the divine God. I mean, these are all tricky terms, of course, but if you think of it from a non-dual perspective, well, how does the non-dual experience itself? Well, the only way to really do that is a reflection of itself, just the creation of duality, which is the creation of the material world. And then, of course, experiencing, the reflection of itself. So we are that, we're experiencing each other as subject and object. So, this is all part of the integration. Of course, then there's the energetic side at a physical level. If various things have arisen in a session, I mean, ideally they're all processed, but maybe it's more just a highlighting. Perhaps there's a disease in someone that has been kind of poked into, so to speak, and there's been some initial massage or something like that, but something is still kind of bothering the person. Maybe it's time to go to another medical professional to go a bit deeper. And of course, there might be the awakening or the opening of deep psychological content, shadow content. And if that's opened up but not fully processed, or there's some questions about, oh wow, there's some trauma that happened in my childhood that I had completely dropped into denial about or forgotten about, and all of a sudden that's waking up for me. Well, now it's time to potentially go to see a therapist about that and unpack that and work with that. So again, I think there's a variety of potential layers depending on each individual's experience coming out of it.
Yeah, sure. Another question that is a little bit off topic, not still not off topic, but I'm curious, since we're talking about telepathy during psychedelic experiences, have you noticed a opening up of telepathic experiences in your non-psychedelic life?
Yeah, well, that's funny, right? Because it's something that I've desired, going deeper, but no, not really, and I've played with that with my wife, outside of psychedelics, and haven't really been able to drop in. At the same time, though, both my wife and I have been able to do more out-of-body work since working with psychedelics. I mean, something that we never had tuned in to prior to psychedelics. And so that's, basically doing the out-of-body or astral travel, normally from the dream state, and journeying out of the body, and it's its own thing, right? Like there's a whole, there can be lucid dreaming, and there certainly is some overlap between lucid dreaming and, journeying through the astral, so to speak. But there tends to be kind of an energetic signature when you leave the body. So quite often, I'll show up in a dream, and then I become lucid, and then of course, having spent time with the techniques, it's like, okay, I want to be out of body and journey and, to these deeper layers in the universe, so to speak. And so then the thought form of jumping out of body is a thing. And it usually comes with a very high-pitched vibration and feeling of leaving the body, which also can occur on psychedelics. So there's a, yeah, again, it's, there's a ton of overlap between these different ways of doing things. And the signatures tend to be the same in terms of, again, leaving the body is usually a high vibrational thing. You can end up in the tunnel of white light, which more often than not tends to be a portal to journey to another place. Of course, while you're in that portal, there's still a feeling of unity consciousness and those things. But yeah, the next thing you know, you're in another dimension or part of the universe, meeting other entities or discarnate
Wow.
beings, whatever label you want to use.
Yeah. Have you had the experience working with someone, in this mind meld of other beings coming in, these discarnate beings? I know the DMT entities are talked about quite a bit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it can be it can be very cool. Where just a quick example, it's kind of a funny story in terms of synchronicity as well. I had been doing the work for a while. This is long before even contemplating writing a book, but I was kind of wondering, where does all this work with telepathy and mind melding go? And I was reading a book, I was lying in bed. It was kind of earlier evening, and as I'm contemplating this, there's a knock at the door. I go to the door, and there's this guy, and he's in town. He was visiting from another city, and he was promoting some development work and, donating money to a particular cause. And it was a bit cold outside, so he stepped in the door, and he noticed this art piece, visionary art piece that I had up on the wall, and he was very taken by it. And so I invited him in, and I'm like, if you want to see a couple more, there's more upstairs. So he came in and looked, and we're getting into a bit of a conversation. He sees this painting on the wall. He's like, "Oh, what's that?" I'm like, "Oh, that's Mother Ayahuasca." And at this point, I was a bit reluctant to say anything because, I assumed that he was a Christian, and that might be a little weird to get into that conversation, but he wasn't. And he's like, "Oh yeah, I've been wanting to get into, or, ayahuasca has been calling me for like half a year." And we talked a bit more, and then he had mentioned a shaman. I'm like, "Yeah, well, I've worked with that shaman for a number of years." He's like, "Wow, So it just starts to go a little deeper in this weird synchronicity, right? Like just kind of this random knock at the door. And then I mentioned to him, working with 5-MeO-DMT. So the next thing, he comes back a couple of days later, he's doing 5-MeO-DMT and going deep. And then we talk about the mind meld. He's like, "Oh, that sounds interesting." And he was only in town for a couple of weeks, but he came over on the weekend. I went through the whole briefing, and we drop into the mind meld together doing this long session. And, so there's the exchange of energetic work. We're, kind of journeying together. And the next thing, his Chinese ancestors show up for both of us. And it was just this loving presence. They weren't there for long, but they were just offering their blessings and goodwill and healing for both of us. And it was just, we absorbed that. It was very beautiful. And then off they were, and we just went deeper into the session. So that's just one of lots of things like that. I've connected to, ancestors of my own. My father passed away more recently, and I've connected to him very profoundly after he died. And I've done that with my wife. So, we're in a telepathic session together, and my father, unannounced and uninvited, and of course there's no issue with that, but he just shows up, and there's a long backstory there. We have had, we had challenges while he was alive, but somehow in the intervening time over the course of, the year plus that he was, he had left his physical body, he had been doing some work because he came through as this very angelic, loving being. And it was just profound and beautiful. Yeah, again, for both my wife and I. And my wife didn't really know him, right? Like we lived in different cities, and we both, very immediately picked up on his energetic signature. Is just, yeah, awesome.
Well, that sounds very hopeful that people can heal after life, right?
Well, that's it, and that is a thing. Like it's like, and that's, I think, part of the integration and understanding of how deep this is that we are spirit and body, or soul and body, depending on how you define those terms, and that we're on this kind of infinite journey of lifetime to lifetime, like, and very possibly not just humans, like that we've come from other planets, or that after we're done doing the human thing, that we'll journey off to somewhere else and be some other type of being. So yeah, we're kind of on this long, crazy journey together, and that we're constantly evolving, and that this evolution does occur after death, but then, theoretically between lives as well.
No, I find that very hopeful. I find that very hopeful. So let me ask, I know we're starting to run out of time here a little bit, but the shared experiences, if I understand correctly from your book, when you intentionally go through this psychedelic mind meld, after the psychedelic starts wearing off, what happens is you each write down the experience. It's not where you're like, "Hey, I saw this," and you're like, "Yeah." But you each kind of write down the experience and then sort of compare notes. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly went, we'll say I went through a phase of doing that because for me, again, I've a bit of a scientific background, and very skeptical based again on
Yeah,
the
yeah.
materialist paradigm, which I was raised in. And I was also raised as a Christian, but I, pushed that away. And yeah, so the very skeptical side of me brought in this kind of scientific approach of making sure that we were not trying to create something in our minds before the session by setting a particular intention. And then, of course, not trying to influence each other's reality as we're in the session. And yeah, so then, writing down independently of each other and comparing notes. So I went th through that phase just to kind of convince myself, really, of the
Yeah.
truth of these experiences. And I have to say, yeah, now for some time, unless the other person wants to, and I'll throw that out there that where we can do the writing, but I generally don't do that as much anymore just
Okay.
because I fundamentally believe this is a thing.
Okay. Yeah, it just seemed kind of important for verification. And I was thinking, I
Yeah.
think the same way that you are in terms of the Western materials, the mindset is that, yeah, this is the best way to verify it is by, writing it down and then comparing notes rather than having the conversation immediately or even through the experience. Let me ask you this. What is your hope for, your book is an incredible book, and it's the first book. I think it's the only book that I'm aware of that really kind of addresses this in depth. Where do you think this will go from here? Where would you like to see this work that you're doing, the psychedelic mind melt, where would you like to see it go from here?
Well, I think there's probably a few layers. One is, in terms of writing the book, there are a bunch of different reasons for writing it. One of the big ones was really just to, be a briefing for those I would work with. So it's really a kind of a training manual or a how-to manual in many ways. So there is that element of putting that out into the world, like, hey, this is something that's possible despite the dominant paradigm in Western society, the materialist paradigm, as we're talking about. And so it's an opening to a much deeper exploration for those who are interested in doing it. And of course, it's advanced work, but I'm really hoping that, there are others that will drop in and do this type of exploration. I'm also hoping that those who do drop in and when they have, their profound experiences, that they write them down and they get back to me. I have my email at the back of the book. I can be contacted on Facebook as Wade Richardson. I've also created a group site on Facebook, the Psychedelic Mind Meld, and I'm hoping, that's a place where I can post these shared stories of, using psychedelic telepathy and the depth of these other experiences, with the idea potentially in the long run where I can write a follow-up book that might be an amalgamation of all these other people's experiences, just to kind of, put out there a broader flavor of what's possible and how profound this truly is, because I think it is an infinite array of experience. If we think of ourselves as, individual fingers on the infinite hand of God, each with our own unique fingerprint, there's such a wide range of possible things that can happen. And so I'm really excited to have people get back to me with their experiences with that.
Yeah.
Another piece to the book too is just to validate what's already out there. As you mentioned, ayahuasca, I think this goes back to the 1920s, was called telepathine.
Right.
And so certainly, there's no book that's written like this, but it certainly shows up, in a sentence or a couple paragraphs in a variety of books on psychedelics out there, more as kind of a footnote, but that this happens. This is a thing.
Yeah.
So there's that. And I'm also hoping that, this might reach into more research at a scientific level and going deeper in terms of what is possible, not only with telepathy, but with psychic ability more generally, working with psychedelics. And certainly if we look back to the ancient literature of, the Greeks and the Romans, the Egyptians and others in the Near East and in India, there was widespread use of psychedelics. And I think many of them were adepts of working with thought form. And that's a very particular thing. So this would be dropping more into setting a very particular intention before going into the session and trying to manifest various things in a session, which could still include healing. And, my preferred way of working is really with, love and compassion, healing and wisdom. And those are kind of the pillars I work with. And Yeah, just seeing a broader expansion of that. And I think in the longer term and in the big picture, hopefully just a more of a recognition that we are all connected, you know, that proverbial unity of consciousness, that we are all one. And that demands kind of, if you want to think of it from an integration level, a deeper loving compassion for each other, where, you know, we will see less wars on the planet because, you know, we are a warring species, where we will see more caring and compassion, especially, you know, if you look across the United States and where we're going right now, it seems like loving and compassion is the antithesis of our immediate future. Because, and I think a lot of that speaks to the extreme trauma and shadow contents in the United States, you know, Americans being this warrior culture of wanting to be number one and, you know, running around the world, killing, you know, millions of innocent people throughout its history, even its own starting point of killing, you know, so many Aboriginal people across the country and essentially stealing land and all of that stuff. Like, it's very dark stuff. And so I'm hoping that, you know, this type of work and other work like it, again, extends a much deeper loving compassion where we see each, you know, ourselves and the other and start treating each other more respectfully that way.
No, I agree. We've got a lot of healing to do. And especially in this nation, I think that we're a little bit possessed by the shadow at the moment, and we need to do that shadow work. And fortunately, there are people doing it.
Yeah,
Fortunately,
well, I
there are
think Trump
people
in his
doing
own
it.
way is doing it in a strange sort of way because he is showing how he's bringing the shadow out right into the light of day, right? Like, how dark is it really? Well, he's that guy. It's
No,
dark.
I've thought about that many times, and I'm going to do a video, I think, on my YouTube channel, kind of looking at Carl Jung's essay on Wotan that he wrote right, I think it was right before World War II or during World War II, about the Germans and the collective shadow. And I think that that's something that we need to look at here as well. And, you know, it's a point of healing. It's traumatic, but it's also a point of healing. And I've come to the conclusion that it's just something that's necessary. We have to do this in order to heal. So, all right. Well, Wade, thank you so much for your time today and the conversation. And thank you for the book. It really is an amazing book. And I encourage everyone to pick up a copy. I normally ask, you know, what are you working on next? But you kind of told me that you didn't really want to talk about that. It's still in a secretive stage. And you gave your Facebook and the emails in the back of the book. Is there any last thing you would like to add before we end this?
Well, I'd like to thank you, Nick. I think the work that you're doing with your podcast is amazing. And yeah, it was a great conversation. I'm really happy that you took a look through the book and invited me on. It's an exciting topic for me to share, and I'm glad that you were so open to engaging in it. So yeah, I had a
Well,
lot of
thank
fun
you.
today. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I had a lot of fun too. It's a really great topic and it's a really good book. So, all right. Well, Wade, again, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Okay, take care, Nick.
Okay. And that's a wrap on episode 180 of Rebel Spirit Radio. Thank you so much for listening or watching if you're part of my YouTube audience. Now, anyone who's watched an episode of Rebel Spirit Radio knows what's coming up next. All the usual. Sign up for my Patreon, share this with friends and family, and on social media too, please. Subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. I think you know the drill. But the thing is, all of that is really important. Sharing, subscribing, or following, they're all free and they only take a few seconds of your time and they really do help. Right now, I've got 10 subscribers on the podcast platform that I use to distribute the podcast, but I know that there are way more people listening. Likewise on YouTube. So subscribing, following really do help and they take very little effort on your part. I'm in the process of trying to make changes to the podcast and the YouTube channel. It's very, very slow going, but your help will allow me to complete this. As I always like to say, I'm here in the Front Range now, doing missionary work in regards to spirituality, ecology, and religion, consciousness, the esoteric, and how all of this can help humanity heal their sacred relationship with the living earth. So if you feel moved by the rebel spirit, and you know, I sure hope that you do, then please, by all means, help me share the good news. I'm Nick Mather, and you've been listening to or watching Rebel Spirit Radio. Until next time, may it be at peace, may you flourish in all possible ways, and may you continue to nurture your rebel spirit.